This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Russell, and today we have one of the finest in BFM. He's from the morning show, morning crew.
The morning run.
That's what I meant. It's obviously, I listen to it, don't I? Every morning. The morning run, he is Sim Weeboon.
Hello, good to be here.
And we have the return of, after a long time, a man who does a great many things. He is a documentary filmmaker. He's a teacher, which is going to come in useful. And he's also the man who's taken over my column at the Edge.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Zan Azli.
Hello.
So our three topics this week will be, topic number one is hoaxes, especially Malaysian hoaxes, ? Topic number two is, what's the most important thing you learned during your education that had nothing to do with your education? And finally, topic number three is when the students know more than the teacher. And you may have noticed that there's a bit of an education thing going on, because we have been asked by the United Nations to dedicate our show to the International Day of Education. That's how important a bit of culture is.
What an honor.
Well, yeah. No, they called us out on the hotline. And so we're doing a sort of education-y type thing. So, but kind of not exactly education. Topic number one, hoaxes, Sim.
Well, yeah, so you could say it's education because, you know, enlighten yourself, I guess. So I want to talk about hoaxes in a sense where, like, why do people believe it, or do people get, you know, specifically interested with it, you know, when you kind of, like, tell them a story that is so obvious that it's a hoax, you know. But also, I have a question is that, like, you know, what would kind of, like, pass on as a Malaysian hoax? Because, you know, the very famous hoax around the world are, like, you know, the ones that goes like, oh, the moon landing was faked, mm-hmm. you know, or, I don't know, the Mothman, you know, Bigfoot, kind of, these kind of things.
But you're also getting, like, urban legends.
Yeah, urban legends, you know, hoaxes, you know, these type of stories that really...
Conspiracy theories,
yeah. Right. You know, I mean, they're not exactly scientific journals grounded in reality, if you would ask scientists and researchers and stuff like that. They're new stories, you know. But people are seemingly so interested with them, you know. And we've even crossed the threshold where you have people that believe that the world is flat, you know. Or, you know, the vaccines are... you know, orchestrated by the government to mind control you. So it's very, to me, it's fascinating. I mean, I don't believe them, but I'm fascinated the fact that it's so ridiculous, but people really dedicate their lives to it. People really believe it. Yeah. And in Malaysia, we have flat earthers, unfortunately. We have
anti-vaxxers.
Yeah. Lots of anti-vaxxers.
Lots of anti-vaxxers.
Exactly. But what is a Malaysian kind of like hoax that we have?
Or conspiracy theory.
Yeah, or conspiracy that we have that is uniquely Malaysian. I'm struggling to think of it.
Yeah. I know. Zan, you got anything?
Well, a long time ago, I did this documentary about the, I don't know if you want to call it a hoax or conspiracy theory, the Rahman theory.
Ooh, what's that?
All the prime ministers in Malaysia, you follow the Rahman, R-A-H-M-A-N.
Yeah. I think that what that fits with is a very Malaysian thing, which is superstition.
Ah.
Yeah, so, well, a hoax is defined as a falsehood deliberately fabricated to masquerade as the truth. It has a distinguishable from errors in observations of judgment, rumors, urban legends, pseudoscience. So it kind of like touches on everything, but it's perpetrated with an intention.
I've got one. 1MDB.
Yeah, so that was going to classify 1MDB as a hoax, but
it's a con.
It's a con, yeah. So, you know, I guess.
All right, okay, it's not a hoax.
But well, you see, even now, when you kind of like, you know, we work in news and stuff like that, we observe it, you have the fringes of the supporters that really do believe this entire 1MDB thing is created by the current government of the day to besmirch their hero, Najib.
Okay.
You know?
So a subset of the 1MDB story would be the story that a Saudi prince gave the money. That comes under the category of hoax, though.
Doesn't it? You could say that, yeah. So, you know, then we go further and like, but you do find people that really believe in it. And I don't know, it just boggles me that these people believe in it. And I'm wondering, is it because of an educational factor? Is it because, you know, not to kind of like insult them or anything, but is it because, you know, they're not exposed to certain education levels, the information that other people read? I mean, I'm wondering why as well do these people believe it? Or are they just so kind of like stuck in their ways that nothing that mainstream media or anything... tells them that they believe it.
Well, Zan, you're a documentary maker, you're a journalist. a teacher and you're a father, you should know the answer to all of that.
Yes, I should know everything.
Especially the father bit, that really gives you kind of like a remit to know everything.
Know everything in the world.
Why is the sky blue, Daddy?
Because you're in the business of making... Well, you think you're telling the truth, don't you?
I think so. I'm not so sure, but yeah.
Yeah. So then the hoaxer, the con man or whatever, is someone who knows that they're telling an untruth and passing it off as the truth.
Yeah. Another fascination where this stems from is as well the Mastika novels, the Mastika magazines.
Right, yeah.
You know,
they're still around, aren't they?
They're a good source of these stories, you know. They have all these stories about, like, you know, Oramiña, all these djinns and stuff like that.
Rising from the dead.
Yeah, and, like, you really don't know where these stories come from. You don't know if they're true or not, but they're always a fun read. And I think that, like, part of, like, why people kind of like perpetuate these very superstitious kind of like believe, and when these stories come out, it excites them. It's this fascination we have culturally with stuff like this. But you know, I don't know if it's going to last as the time comes, as we go into the future. You know, some part of me hopes that it doesn't, because you know, it spreads misinformation, it actually does damages. But you know, these stories, sometimes when they don't do harm, they're actually quite amusing.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating idea, Sim. And if there are any listeners out there who can think of any examples of a specifically Malaysian kind of... We haven't really given it the right word. It's not a hoax. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's kind of all of these things thrown in together.
It's
supernatural, but kind of the other thing, whatever that is.
Yes.
Right. Okay, great. So, all right, interesting. I'm going to think about that one. So we'll move on, though, to topic number two, International Day of Education. Which is a bit awkward because I did really badly at education. I was a complete failure. And
but I looked to you as a teacher.
Bless you, Sim, but I wouldn't if I were you. you better rethink that one. And yeah, no, I failed all my exams. And so I walked out of school at the age of 17 being a failure, and I'd internalized that. So I mean, I kind of fell between the cracks. But as Mark Twain said, he never let his schooling get in the way of his education. And so I want to ask the question, what is the most important thing that you learned during your education that had nothing to do with your education? So not kind of, you know, your times table or your ABCs or what have you, but something that happened in that schooling moment. My one is, I wouldn't say important, but it was something that really gripped me was at my school in England, we had a kind of a morning assembly thing, and somebody would come along and talk to the school. And one day, one teacher came up, and I didn't know this teacher. He didn't teach me. I had no contact with him, but he just told a story, which is very unusual. He told a story about this night in the 1840s when there was this terrible train crash in Dundee, when the bridge fell and the train fell into the sea. It was a true story. And he just told it off the top of his head. He just told this story. It was mesmerizing. I was completely gripped. And I was bored to tears by school, and I was awful at it. But when the guy told that story, and the feeling I had of just being mesmerized, it's like, I want in my life, if I ever can, to replicate that moment, to do it that myself. So that's one thing that happened to me. Whether or not I've achieved it, I don't know. But it's something I've always wanted to do, is try to get that. You guys... Anything in your schooling that had nothing to do with your schooling?
I don't know if it's like completely related to schooling or not schooling, but you know, being Chinese, kind of like coming from a Chinese family, you know, with a standard kind of like very Chinaman dad, you know, did his own business, you know, very Chinese mom, you know. I kind of like was raised and, you know, academically, you know, to either be an engineer or an accountant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I like drawing. I liked arts, you know. I like the creative type of subjects, you know. But obviously, when the time came, you know, you're like, you know, you guys remember what's the thing you can skip a grade on? BTS. Yeah, you know, I had a chance to do BTS and I take it, but I actually could jump, but I decided not to jump. You know, my parents pushed me to do that. Yeah,
it was really full on. It was going to be engineering or accounts.
They never outrightly. I mean, honest to God, when I was in high school, I didn't know what an engineer did.
Yeah,
you know, I just know that I need to study at maths, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, even up to college, you know, it was, you know, I was like told to study, you know, you do lah, the smart people subject lah, because you can do it, you know. So obviously, where I am now, I am not an engineer.
No, you're not.
I'm not an accountant. I'm not a doctor, you know. I'm a radio producer, you know.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of job that I never imagined myself to, or I would say I never allowed myself to imagine myself doing, you know. So I guess what I've learned through, so this is not really in school, but it's the product of me being in school.
Sure, that's what I'm asking, yeah.
To realize that, like, you don't really have to be bound to what you're told all the time. There's some things in life that is so different that you, even though you imagine yourself never to experience, that you eventually experience once, you know, once it comes, you know. I mean, I when I went to college, I did engineering subjects, you know. I was like, the foundation was in, like, you know, physics. And this was like high-level physics, the type of, you know, college-level physics.
You broke out of that, though.
Yeah. I did it, but I didn't enjoy it. And it was only at that point in life that I decided to, like, honestly, if this is my next 40 years, I'm not going to be happy.
Okay.
But I didn't have a backup plan. So I just did, you know what? I'm just going to do like a marketing degree, you know. You know? And then I found my way to
You are a very practical person, yeah. So Zan, what?
I don't know if I was lucky or unlucky, but my father, my parents, my father specifically, right, that didn't pay attention to academic results. He was from a very young age, standard one. He was always telling me, exams not important. Like, everybody also take exams. You know? And when we go for report card days and he meets the teacher and the teacher will start talking about my results and all that, and my father will be like, no, don't tell me that. I can see it in the book. Right? How is he with his friends? Does he get bullied? Does he have leadership qualities?
Okay. Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. So he was always like that with me, you know? And I guess, if to answer your question, what I learned from my education that was not related to my education was standing up for yourself. My father was somebody who always told me that you got to be confident, you got to stand up for yourself. You know, if somebody pushes you around, push them back. Never throw the first punch. But if they hit you, hit back.
All right, so you went with the flow of your father's words. Sim, you went kind of against your parents.
Say, like, it's not to say that like my parents did me wrong. I guess for them as well, they're not exposed to that field. My dad was a businessman.
Right,
you know, my mom, she did a business and she was a housewife of that. They're not exposed. They don't have friends who
but
are...
But right now, at home, are they crying?
No, they're
what,
cool. They're
what
cool.
Happened
they're
to our boy?
They're surprised and they're delighted, you know. I mean, I guess...
You had so much promise.
Yeah, for them, it took them a while to kind of like... When I told them, like, you know, I don't want to be an engineer.
He's
I don't like
radio.
This. They're like, you know, for them, they're like, are you sure? I mean, there was that bit of like, they're like, are you sure you can make a living from this? But at this point where I am now, my dad listens to me. He enjoys what I do. And, you know, we actually can talk, you know, at home about all this politics and stuff like
that. They got other kids, haven't they?
They have my brother.
Okay,
and,
okay.
Yeah.
So,
and he makes more money than I do. Yeah, he's my younger brother.
Okay,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
But you've got kids yourself, son.
Yes, I do.
So what are you... Are you just letting them just get on with it, or are you intervening? I mean, what?
So there's a little bit of balance between my wife and I, right? I am like totally loose. Yo, do whatever you want. Go take dance. Go learn chess. You know, don't really care about your exam results and all that. But my wife will be like, hey, you know what? You got to balance out your life. Do a little bit of studying. Do a bit of your homework. You know, everything should come to a balance. And at the end of the day, when she gets like good grades and she wins an academic award, I'm quite happy too, and I'm quite proud too, you know. But I think it's just a matter of finding a balance, because with my parents, my father was like that, but my mother tried to keep it as a balance too, right? Yeah, my mother was still saying, okay, you still got to study a little bit, you know. My grades were not bad. My grades were quite okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess the conclusion is that clearly from what you're saying, the family environment, the home environment is really profoundly important in shaping one way or the other.
Factors in a lot.
Factors in perhaps more than the school. See, I, on the other hand, I was alone in the school experience, and I didn't have my father died a long time ago, and my mother was, you know, she had three kids who were very annoying, and so it was a bit difficult for me. I didn't really understand what the hell was going on. Okay, so I guess the moral of the story is on this, the day of education, is the home life is incredibly important.
Mm.
Yeah,
very,
yeah.
Very true, very true.
Okay, and we're going to find out a bit more about that. I think, perhaps, maybe, in topic number three with Zan here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Sim Weeboon, and Zan Azli. And now, Zan, you're a teacher. This is the International Day of Education. And you want to tell us about when the students know more than the teacher.
Yes. I teach undergraduate students at different universities and colleges around town. I've been teaching since 2004. That makes it, well, that makes me old, right?
You obviously don't teach maths.
16 years.
Clearly you don't teach maths. What do you teach?
So it's important that people know what I teach. I teach journalism, broadcasting, film, and the media.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so these are the subjects that I teach. And I started teaching at a very young age, in my mid-20s, right? I started teaching and I felt like I knew a lot. And I had things to offer to the students. And I go in and I tell them about, I already started working for a few years. I could share some experience. I knew a little bit of the theories, you know, and the students would listen to what I had to say, right? But then after the years had gone by, the last 4 or 5 years, maybe, I'm getting a little bit older. The students are getting younger.
You've got white hair.
I've got a lot of white hair, right? And I've noticed that the students, because they're studying like media, journalism, broadcasting, film, they seem to know more than me, right? And I'd be explaining stuff to them and they're like, hey, Mr. Zan, we know this, you know what? And they would give me new ideas too. I think it's the technology that they embrace, especially the package of content that gets presented. I've been working for 20 years in the media industry and pretty old school at the content that I consume. And I look at these young people, they've got new ways to consume media. I mean, it started out with really edgy news sites like Says.com and Chili Sauce and things like that, right? Where the content is presented in such an edgy way, such an informal way that people of my generation will read it, this is not proper English, it should be published. No way.
This is not news.
La, la, la. You know, it's just serious stuff, man.
You guys.
You guys, G-A-I-S.
Stop it.
But then, this is the same content that they are consuming, and they're taking news seriously because of this kind of content. And I used to work in this 24-hour news channel, and I was in charge of like adapting to new media for them. This was about 5-6 years ago. And now, you know, I hear my students telling me, oh, there's so many different platforms out there. I'm used to the normal social media platforms like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And these kids are coming and telling me, look, we're not on Instagram anymore. We're not on Facebook anymore. Instagram maybe a little bit, you know. And then they've got like apps like TikTok where people lip-sync to songs.
Yep.
And now they're talking about using that for news.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. There was this story about the China one. The video came out as if like she was doing makeup. But what she was doing, actually, she was reporting on what's going on with the Uyghur people and the Chinese camps, you know?
See?
So it was actually quite ingenious, yeah.
But it's only 15 seconds.
Well, you can do multiple videos.
But
the
knowledge of the context of what's happening in China with the Uyghur people, they must have received that information from longer form sources. I mean, you know, the girl in the TikTok, she's merely commenting on... Or in, you know.
Well, which is what, I guess that's why they get so many flack from the traditional news places where, because they're mostly seen as aggregators. They take news from long form multiple sources and they condense it down to bite size, more edgier kind of like language to be presented to new age readers, you know, which is, I mean, for the traditionalists, it's like, you know, like, how dare you do that? Like,
sure.
But for the readers, I mean, you know, the young people, they're like, I mean, I understand the language. This language appeals to me. I'm not going to read your long form because when what it takes me to read 10 minutes and your beautiful 10,000 type of details that I don't need, I want straight to the point news that is, you know, presented to me immediately.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I agree with what you're saying, right? And I see this in my students. They want very, very fast, bite-sized news content, right? But then here's where I still see myself as still relevant, you know? What I say to them is that, okay, cool. You've got these 15-second videos that you're looking at. You want to know more, go to the Washington Post. You want to know more, go read some BuzzFeed long form, you know?
Yeah.
And then some of them will be like, but they'll try. And then they'll come back and say, oh my God, there's so much more. You know? So it shouldn't be just that one thing. It should be complementary, right? So I see my role now as facilitating what they already know and just giving them a wider view.
Sensei. Yeah. So sending them into different directions to follow up on.
Yep.
You're like a human link, kind of.
I guess so, for the 20, 30 kids in my class.
Yeah. But so what age are these kids?
Early 20s, late teens, early 20s.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's go even younger. Your oldest daughter's 8 years old.
Yes.
I know she's not necessarily, you know, consuming the news, but what's she being raised on? Because I was raised on TV. Right. I know whether on TV, and then you go to the cinema, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. TV, three channels, and it grew a bit more.
So my wife and I, we control our kids' screen time and gadget time, right? So the content that they consume would be, it's not TV. They're not on social media. So they'll be watching like TV shows on, I guess shows on Netflix and iFlix and things like that, right?
But they're kind of long form, as it were.
They're long form. They're long form. So they're not very short form. So that those are the kinds of things that they consume. But news is something that I just realized that my daughter, the other day, this is 2 weeks ago, my daughter came up to me and said, "Hey, Pops, you know this election thing, it's democracy, is it? You mean you pick?" Wow. She's 8 years old. So you pick who is going to be your leader? You know, so how do you pick? You know, what makes you, how do you know who to pick? She was talking to me about democracy. I'm like, whoa. And then I realized.
It's your daughter.
Yeah. I realized that she was picking it up from the conversations that I would have with my wife, with my father. My father loves talking politics. With my uncle.
Oh, all fathers do. Yeah.
And she calls, our former education minister, Uncle Mazli, because she hears us talking about the education system.
Okay, so that, again, though, that's humans in the real world.
Yes, yes.
Right, yeah. But most kids are being left alone. I'm going to ask you another question, Zan. You, a while back, you made a documentary about the Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh.
Yep.
Right? And that's a big deal. You went all the way out there and you made a long-form documentary on that kind of thing. If you were to take that story, even that material, and craft it specifically for the generation of your students. So what would they do? What can you imagine they would do with it? And how would you, if you had to redo it now for a new world, how would you do it?
Okay, so I have shown my documentary to a lot of my students in my class and all that, right? They receive it quite well.
But they had to sit down and watch it because sensei said.
If not, they will fail, right?
Yeah, so it's not exactly the correct.
The way I think they are receptive of it is because the way I produce the content is very raw, very very YouTube style, very because I shoot by myself and I'm like doing selfies, you know.
All right,
and,
so you think you've already done it the way that
I did it before YouTube.
All right, so you
I
think
did the selfie before it was right, called right. the selfie.
Okay.
I think one way, because the current younger generation at least is said to that they have a very short attention span. But it's not that they have. I don't think people have people nowadays have a short attention span. Is it there's so much content out there, like a lot. You know, you go on Facebook, you go on YouTube. There are so much content. So what actually happens is I really need that one piece that speaks out to me, and how you kind of like crack that code where most news organizations do that. You know, like your Fox. Your AJ24, the Al Jazeera. Mm. What they do is from their long form interviews, which they do have, their 50 minute videos, they cut out like maybe a minute or like 20, 30 seconds of the most like controversial, exciting part. And those parts will be kind of like pushed out to the touch points where you get on Instagram, on Facebook, where, you know, let's say you're scrolling and you see like, you know, this guy talking about something, you're like, oh, that's interesting. To find out more, watch the full video. And then, you kind of like, back then you don't really need to do that. Back then, you know, it's more of a reputational thing because there's just not so many options out there. So you know that 999 EDC Siasat, you have to watch it tonight because you know that something is going to be good there for the next 20 minutes. But now, because there's so many different types, you know, everyone's fighting, so they need to, that one formula is to like, just create that 15 minute kind of like ad of your show or your documentary and capture the attention and reel them in.
Yeah, that's right, because a lot of people now, the young people, they deep dive if they're interested in something.
Exactly.
They do, don't they?
They deep dive.
It's reflective to what you said earlier where, you know, they get interested by all these small tidbit articles, but you facilitate them once they've interested to the long form.
You're not going
to
get 100% of them.
Yes.
You know, but those who are interested, they'll go full on.
Which is good because then you get the quality ones who you know they're interested and they might invest themselves in it and it might help them grow. Those that kind of like fall through the cracks, well, you know, sorry, bye.
Yeah, that's me. You're talking about me. I was talking about earlier. So Sim, one final question for you. Are you a young person? I mean, do you,
I'm getting old.
Yeah, I mean, are you?
Well, I think he's young. He look you are.
But
young
do you?
As well.
You yeah. just said I got yeah. a lot of white hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a product of stress, I would imagine. Yeah. But you know, physical appearances has nothing to do with age. Yeah.
All right. And Zana, so you said that at the moment you think you've still got some relevance, right?
A little bit. Yes.
How much longer do you think it's going to last?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Before they just simply switch you off. Right. Okay. Oh, cool. Thank you for that. So new education on this International Day of Education. That's we've done our bit for the United Nations. You can go, Producer Ali can go tell the General Assembly that we've done, everything's been sorted out. But we move on now to final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. Sim, go first.
Yes. Okay. So in relation to what I talked about earlier, I want to recommend this Twitter account. It's called Hoaxeye, HOAXEYE. So they call themselves Hoax Fighter and Fact Finder. So what they do is, you know, you got these videos and these photos out of like, you know, UFO arrival or this car can float and stuff like that. What nonsense stories. And they actually, when you tag them in it, then they will try to go out in their way to debunk those hoax, you know, like, oh no, this is untrue, this video is edited, oh, this actually video is reversed, you know, here is actually the real article, here is the context behind this. So check it out. You know, they've a lot of like interesting videos that when you see the explanation behind it, it's actually really interesting. You know, they even have like photos of like mermaids or UFOs, and you're like, no, this is from this set of this movie that you've actually never heard of, like that. Yeah. So go check it out. Hoaxeye, HOAXEYE on Twitter.
There was this other one called Snopes. I don't know if you remember it. Once upon a time, Snopes.com, which was a sort of a truth-telling source. You know, you just check out to find out if that story was actually true. And they were very good. But then they actually got bought by a hoax-making organization.
I can't, no cannot way. Remember.
Yeah. So then it became like rubbish and
oh, yeah. Such a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the story fully, but you cannot trust the source. So, cool. Hoaxeye. My recommendation is, it's a brand new movie. I mean, it's an actual brand new movie, 1917. Uh-huh. I went and watched it the other day. It's in the cinemas right now.
Sam Mendes.
Yes. And it's really good. It's really good. I actually had two great uncles who were in the First World War. It's set during the First World War. One of my great uncles lived, one died. And so he came from a small Welsh mining village and he's buried in Damascus.
Wow.
Yeah, and died of dysentery in the last month of the war, poor fella. And my family, my mother's family, completely destroyed by the First World War. So that's why I have events from 100 years ago. That's why I have no British cousins, aunts, uncles. They were pretty much just all wiped out. So when I, you know, watching the movie, I'm fascinated by the First World War. It's a really good film.
Why is it great? Why did you like the movie?
Well, you know, he's used this camera technique of sort of like one continuous take. So the concept obviously isn't one continuous take, but he tries to make it seem like it is. But the takes are very long. But after a very short while, you forget about that. You stop trying to look, oh, where's the cut? Where's the cut? And you're just drawn into a slightly impossible story of two guys having to deliver a message. And as they go through the Western Front and the French troops, I think they lost something like 10% of the population just on the trenches. And it helps really, it does sort of recreate that. And it's a really good film, I have to say. I really enjoyed it, if that's the right word. This is from the man who made, I think, the best Bond movie in recent years, Skyfall. And now he's made this film and it's really good. So that's 1917. And Zan.
Yes, my recommendation, in line with education. My best friend, one of my best friends, has three kids, and just like me, three kids.
Okay.
And they're about my daughter's age, right? From 4 years old up to like 11 years old, 12 years old. And his kids create animation videos, and claymation, stop motion.
His children,
yeah, together. And they just use normal, you know, handphones. And they also play music and they record themselves jamming in their house. And they post their work, their animation videos, their magic videos, their music onto all the social media platforms. You can find them on Facebook, you can find them on Instagram, you can find them on Twitter. They are known as Young Arif because they're all called Arif.
Okay.
And it's Young as in Young. Arif, and they're a big inspiration. They've, a lot of their posts have gone viral. They've been in the news. They've been on TV. And my daughter, my kids are friends with their kids, and it's rubbing off. And I like the fact that, you know, they are learning stuff and doing creative stuff like that. And I want to encourage that. And I want to encourage people with young kids to also, you know, explore, you know.
Cool,
kids
cool. So how do we find their stuff?
Just search on any of the social major social media platforms and search for Young Arif, YOUNGARIF.
Right, right. Yeah. And they're like 8 years old and stuff.
8 years old. 10 years right. old, 4 years old. Yeah.
You're gonna be so obsolete, like in 6 months' time. In 6 months' time, these kids right. just will not need you. So.
Well, oh, oh.
Future generations.
The other day, I went to their house. I still had something to offer. I told them how to create like sunset and sunrise with the lights when they do stop motion. Aha.
Oh yeah.
No, after that, they didn't need you.
Yeah, my only contribution.
The sun has set already.
Yeah, my only contribution might be to say, have you tried turning it off and then on again? Oh yeah, it usually works, you know. Okay, so that's Young Arif.
Yes.
The gang, as it were. The family is called Young Arif. Great name. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's show on the International Day of Education. And only remains me now to thank special honored guest Zain Azli.
Thank you.
Are you doing any more trips to the likes of Bangladesh? Anything?
I'm hoping to do more documentary projects this year, yeah.
Okay, so we just keep an eye out for you, which is very easy to do. He's social media, etc. He's there.
Social media guru.
Yeah, yeah. And Sim, thank you. Sim Weibun. Yeah,
thank you. Good to be here.
And I hope you are pleased with your decision to move into the radio and not be an engineer.
I'm happy. My parents are happy, you know. So, you know, we're all one big happy family.
Because they
know?
Have another yeah, son.
You know?
So
I get to meet people like you, you know. So yeah, it's a somewhat enjoyable experience sometimes.
Okay, great. Phew. And myself, Cam Raslan. And so join us next week when the UN will ask us to do something else and we'll say, well, maybe, here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.